No Pad Paramahansa Paribhajakachara Stotara Satri Srimad, His Divine Grace, I see Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shiva Prabhupada Ki Namachari Shiva Hari Das Thakur Ki Jai Premsi Goshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Shri Vaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Ki Jai Maturadam Ki Jai Navadvipdam Ki Jai Grantava Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 20, Text 17 to 20. And the chapter is entitled The Dynasty of Puru. So, repeat with me. Amoghaviram Raja. Oh, this is 20? Oh, sorry. Okay. So, we'll just read this one. Amogha Virya Rajasi Mahishyam Virya Adade Swabhute Swapuram Yatham Kalena Sutta Sasutam. King Dushmanta, who never discharged semen without a result, placed his semen at night in the womb of his queen, Shakuntala, and in the morning he returned to his palace. Thereafter, in due course of time, Shakuntala gave birth to a son. So, I'll just read the translation of next verse. It says, in the forest, Kanyamuni performed all the ritualistic ceremonies concerning the newborn child. Later, the boy became so powerful that he would capture a lion and play with it. Text 19. Shakuntala, the best of beautiful women, along with her son, whose strength was insurmountable and who was a partial expansion of the Supreme Godhead, approached her husband Dushmanta. And today's verse. Yada na jagrihe raja bharya putro anidito shrimbatam sarvabhutanam ke vak aha asharini. Yada naja grihe raja bharya putro anadito shrimbatam sarva bhutanam kevagaha sharirini. And devotees, Yadana jagrihe raja Yada, when, na, not, jagrihe, accepted, raja, the king, dushmanta, bharya putro, his real son and real wife, anidito, not abominable, not accused by anyone. Shrimvatam, while hearing. Sarvabhutanam, all the people. Ke, in the sky. Bak, a sound vibration. Aha, declared. Asharirini, without a body. The translation says, when the king refused to accept his wife and son, who were both irreproachable, an unembodied voice spoke from the sky as an omen and was heard by everyone present. Please repeat. When the king refused to accept his wife and son, who were both irreproachable, an embodied voice spoke from the sky as an omen and was heard by everyone present. Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Dushmanta knew that Shakuntala and the boy were his own wife and son. But because they came from outside and were unknown to the citizens, he at first declined to accept them. Shakuntala, however, was so chaste that an omen from the sky declared the truth so that others could hear. When everybody heard from the omen that Shakuntala and her child were truly the king's wife and son, the king gladly accepted them. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Vatale Shanti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Kriparataya Vrihat Nidana Saritaya Pramasindhya Vati. Hare Krishna. Good morning. It's always a good morning to be reading Srimad Bhagavatam in Sri Mayapur Dham. Such an auspicious place. This verse is describing, as many other verses, the dynasty of very special personalities. And right at the beginning of this canto, in the second chapter, there's a very important point made. When the descendants of the king is being described, the whole dynasty is manifesting different varnas. So in chapter 2, it is said that I just find you the correct quote. Yes. Yes. The descendants of Manu were a Kshatriya line, and in that line there were many sons. One of them became a Shudra. The whole dynasty of that king became Brahmanas. And one of them became a Vaishya. And that's a very important point, because the tendency is to think that someone who is the son of a great personality like a Brahman will be a Brahman. In English it's even said, like father, like son. So that's a natural tendency of humanity to think in those terms. But this second chapter is proving quite the contrary. The second chapter is actually showing that it is by quality that one acquired his conditioned nature, his varna, his occupation, therefore the way he relates to the world in so many ways, including economically. So that is coming from qualities which are developed by higher training. So that's a very important point, because that's an essential point for spirituality. If you observe the history of religion, in all religions, the priests tend to keep the priesthood based on birth, based on positions, and that's when the religion declines. So, bearing that point in mind, we'll come back to that point. We're going to speak, or try to speak, with your blessings, which is assembly of very advanced Vaishnavas. I'm just a simple student in the process of bhakti, trying to share my humble realizations with all of you. Talking about this very exalted king, Dushmanta. Dushmanta Maharaj was very tired. He's wandering, he's looking for shelter. And he goes to a river, there's barren land. And as he walks further, he finds a beautiful forest in Maharashtra. The forest has fruits and flowers and birds, and he's really enchanted by the forest. As he approaches more and more, he finds that forest is protected by a sadhu. Kanyamuni is living there. And not only the fruits and the flowers, when he sees this most enchanting lady, which is looking at him, her fragrance is described as spreading in a very big distance. And she is the most beautiful lady he has ever seen. So immediately he gets infatuated by that lady, and he decides that he wants to marry her inside of his mind. And that was yesterday verse, how that marriage was according to an agreement. And she also desired to have him as a husband. And you may infer or inquire why. Just a scene of material attraction is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. But actually, that's exactly the point which makes this pastime so glorious. Because despite the fact that King Dushmanta is infatuated by this very beautiful goddess, Shakuntala. There is a deep spiritual understanding underlying this pastime. So let's visit first her parents. Vishwamrita, a great Kshatriya, he was observing that the Brahmins had bigger power than the Kshatriyas. So at one point he decided, I don't want to be a Kshatriya anymore because I want power. I want to be a Brahmin. And he started doing so much austerities that everybody was at one point a little disturbed by all those austerities. Until he came to a point where the Brahminical society said, okay, you are Brahman. And then Indra, seeing his austerity, immediately imagined, here is someone doing austerity to enjoy the facilities I have. He wants to come and take my post. So you see, many times when we're doing service, we think the post is the prominent feature. But actually it's the service which is the prominent feature. And this pastime illustrates that. We may think, if I lose my position, someone else will take over. And you start acting in a way to protect your position. And you lose from your vision. What is the goal of that post? The goal of that post is to serve. And the service becomes secondary, when actually it's the opposite. Whatever service we do is with the intention of pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, Indra is upset with Vishwamrita. And so, he thinks, I know, I'm going to invite Goddess Menaka to come and present herself in front of Vishwamrita. And Vishwamrita, even though he could tolerate hunger and thirst and so many difficult situations, when he heard the twinkling of her ankle bells and the bracelets touching each other, just by the way they touch each other, his attention was caught and he opened his eyes. And when he contemplated that beautiful goddess, he could not resist and he desired to marry her, live with her, and so he did, and from the union, a baby was born. But he realized that that was not what he wanted very soon. He was thinking of austerities and tapasya and katar, and family life was not what he was expecting. So he left. And Menaka is thinking, well, I've done my job, I was asked here to come, I've done my job, it's done. She also left, and the baby was left in the forest, and this Muni took care of her. Now here is a very interesting point for us to give a small parenthesis, a small stop and analyze. The Muni was a renunciant. He was living in a forest, yet the forest is described as the most opulent forest. Here a girl appears on his kingdom and he takes care of that girl because he understands there is some deeper meaning. So his renunciation is not contaminated with rejection of the world. He understands the position of the world. Therefore, dharma and ecology. He is living the forest, and a Muni is supposed to live surrounded by beautiful sceneries to facilitate his yoga process. And he's doing that. But his internal vision is of integration with nature. Even though he knows he's not nature, he's beyond, but he understands how to perfectly live in harmony with nature. And he takes care of this girl very nicely. Actually, he does all the rituals for that girl. And after... Oh, thank you. After the king... Now, coming back to King Dushmanta. So this girl has such a birth. She carries the characteristics of her father, because the daughter is said to carry the characteristics of the father. So she is really driven to purity. And she carries the qualities of her mother, who is a goddess. So she has a combination which is so special. And that combination is here pointed out as her chastity. She is so chaste that only by presenting herself to the king, an omen, it's a miracle, comes a voice from the sky. We only hear that in very special moments, like when Kamsa wanted to kill Devaki. There was an omen from the sky. So that's when there's an interference of the divine in this world as we see it. And everybody accepted. So her chastity was the pinnacle of her qualities. And that chastity is again and again described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As you may remember, Vrindadevi was the source of the power, the powerful demon Shankarsudha, because of her chastity. Same as Draupadi, even though she was married to 5 husbands, she was the most chaste woman. So that's one very important point which is underlined in this story. Because it's not just a simple love affair between a king and a beautiful lady. It's a union based on deep cultivation of value. And that starts from birth. Now the king, when he sees her, he realizes she has some special characteristics. And one of the very important points in this verse, it says that the king verse 17. King Dushmanta, who never discharged semen without a result. Just imagine, for a king as powerful as him, he could have any woman he desired in his kingdom, which was basically the world. But he only engaged in sexual activities if there was a result. That means if there was procreation, if there was a purpose behind it. And that is where we start to understand the qualities of a king. First, he was a devotee. And Bhagavatam defines that the king should be a devotee of Krishna or devotee of God. So he qualified. And as an external practice, he would only engage in this sexual activity if it was for a result. When we analyze modernity, leaders are really being leaders because it provides facility. And all we hear is this president has so much facility because he illicitly acquired it. This prime minister did this. This king did this. And so like this. But here we see that this king, he is concerned about virtue. So many times we discuss Varnashram, but one point which is really prominent that we must understand is Varnashram in the 7th canto, when Narada Muni is going to describe Varnashram extensively, he starts in verse 7, 11, 12, 11 to 12, which basically is giving 30 qualities for someone to be a human being. So the whole culture of Varnashram starts with the cultivation of qualities. And sometimes we are distracted as bhakti yogis because there's a verse which says anyone who practices devotional service immediately has the qualities of the demigods. So we prematurely assume, I'm practicing bhakti yoga, therefore I have the qualities. Therefore, I don't need to focus on developing qualities. For example, if we are leaders, the truthfulness of it. You stop someone and say, do you have a minute? But you really want to talk 30 minutes with the person. So truthfulness in small quantities build up to a truthful character. Now a truthful character will inspire devotees to follow. People will follow a truthful person. If it's not a truthful person, the tendency over time is to the inspiration to drop and everybody to dissipate. And we see that happening in our society. Because when the founder child was here, there was so much truthfulness. If someone dared to say an half-truth fact in front of the Foundacharya, he himself would just melt in shame. And that was just something standard. Everybody knew that. Nobody would come in front of Srila Prabhupada and kind of try to hide things or to give half-truth. And there's so many descriptions of disciples who experienced that. So truthfulness was something extremely valued, extremely, extremely nurtured. As time passes in our institution, that truthfulness may decrease. And that's where people may not want to follow that specific leader. And if that happens, there's a tendency of just institutionalizing, making institutional positions. And that's when genuine religion becomes a secular or just a structured religion. And that's the risk everybody who is trying to propose spirituality is running in a kingdom or a movement or a society or religion. And it starts individually. Because if you have a look, maybe some 100 years back or maybe 70 years back, our Foundacharya was in an assembly of Vaishnavas, and he was one sitting on the audience, looking at probably some speaker discoursing about Bhakti Yoga, about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And his position was not a confrontational position. His position was a proactive one. He understood the mission. He did not crystallize a post. I am so and so, therefore have the right to become the next Acharya of this mat, this institution, this movement, but he just prayed very humbly and started from nothing. And from nothing, he built a whole movement. Based on, it was described in a class, I really love the concept, the hypnotic movement, the hypnotic power of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, he would not micromanage as such. He would inspire and eject some kind of hypnotic mood that people just wanted to follow and to serve him, because that was so present in his mood and character. That was actually so essential to the whole mood and character of his whole mission. So that's something which this verse actually is touching upon indirectly, because the king, by not discharging semen without a result, he's actually answering to the qualities which he had acquired, and he generated purity. And that purity, associated with the purity of Shakuntala, who was a goddess, but at the same time was not promoting herself on the social media as a goddess. She was in an ashram, and at the right time, she did her function. And mind you, she did not approach King Dusmanta saying, "You rascal, you had a son, and now you abandon him. I'm going to prosecute you." She did not do that. She just came and presented, "This is your son." So that shows her purity. It was a service. She's bringing him a son, which should be a descendant, someone who rule virtuously the kingdom. And he actually, that son does become a great ruler, as we'll see in the next verses. He becomes Bharata, not the Bharata from King Rishabdev, who is Jada Bharata, but he also becomes an emperor, a great king. So at this point, we may be inquiring, so why aren't we producing so many kings? Prabhupada said he first focused on producing brahmanas. Because if you see, a king requires a great amount of austerity, a great amount of focus, and a great amount of passion, all in one place. It's one of the most difficult positions to acquire. Because we can hear of saintly people who are detached from the material world. We can hear about billionaires and trillionaires who are really engaged in the world. But someone who is dealing with the world directly, but at the same time detached from the world, that's very, very difficult. And that's produced by the Brahminical class. After time, with time, we'll see more and more this type of quality manifesting in our society. Because here is the clue. By producing a pure environment, a pure soul will be invited. So if the society starts to produce good progeny, good children, they'll understand we're bringing pure souls to the planet. But if we think, no, purity has no place, I am the owner of my senses, I do as I please, you may do so, but it will not attract a pure soul. That is within all of us in the society. The future of the society is right here, because when we produce new members, that production is depending on our individual purity, not on the temple purity, not on the guru's purity, but on your purity when you invite your soul to come and be there. So the quality of the movement is made by the quality of the members. So the king, being so virtuous, naturally has people under him who are virtuous. And as soon as he understands, not him, the king, as Prabhupada points out, he knew that Shakuntala and her son were his wife and son. But no one else in the kingdom knew. So it was a very difficult situation for him. He needed evidence. And therefore the omen is the evidence. And therefore that divine position of a king, which has some connection with the divine, was present. Now you may be thinking, that's very well for a king in this era. We are in Kali Yuga. What is of us, right? What is the situation for all of us? How does this apply to me here now, with all my anarthas, with all my positions and sanskars and whatever? That is really applicable, because this is a science which is absolutely predictable, and it will always be. The subtle mentality of a parent and of the parents together generate the next tissue. And Prabhupada was very careful on that, because Prabhupada, he was always telling us how we should be missionaries, because the missionary spirit keeps us on that purity fringe. You can't kind of be relapsed and be a missionary. It doesn't match. People notice from very far distance. They can smell that this person is not genuine. But as soon as you live a genuine life, people come forward and they're waiting for that, because that's the biggest scarcity in the world. The world is looking for purity. Organic food is selling like anything because people want pure things. All food is contaminated. Therefore, people looking for organic food. People looking for pure education. So they are paying huge amounts for people to go to very expensive schools. But in that case, they miss the point. But education to be pure needs to be given by pure teachers. And that's very difficult to generate in a society. It's one of the most difficult things to generate. Because first the society has to understand its duty to maintain those teachers. Then the teacher can manifest his life as a teacher. Otherwise he needs to get a job, and in his free time he'll teach at the Gurukul. He needs to have an inheritance to be able to teach at the Gurukul. But the society has to understand the value. So again we go down to values. So building a society is based on cultivating values individually, and that individual values will manifest, will shine globally. Just like if someone approaches ISKCON Mandir, the first person they meet is the impression of ISKCON. If the person is very kind of not really focused visually, what he speaks is not really what the institution speaks, there's a huge gap between what we think ISKCON is and what ISKCON really is. So, how does this relate to all of us? Srimad Bhagavatam, as a pure, immaculate description of bhakti is inviting us to go back to Godhead, because this environment is not where we belong. We don't belong here. This is not our house. As it was described yesterday, he said, Krishna, sorry, microphone problems. This material world is an ocean of misery with little depressions of relief, and we call that pleasure. So to be in such a situation is not the best conducive position to be in. And the Bhagavatam is inviting us to go back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada is making every endeavor, every arrangement for us to understand that point, that this world is not the world to be in. Finally, Sri Rupa Goswami, when he was in the second time in Puri, he made a very special writing to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually to the world. This is the concluding part of the class. Just before that, if you allow me, we mentioned before that this canto emphasizes how one who is born from a certain varna is not necessarily someone who carries the quality. And Prabhupada says in the 9.2.23.24 purport, he says, from Manu, one son became Kshatriya, another Brahman, and another Vaishya. This concerns the statement of Narada Muni, yasya yao lakshanan proktam pumso var nabhir vai jakan. One should always remember that Brahman Kshatriya Vaishyas should never be regarded as member of a caste by birth. So one is Brahmana, Kshatriya Vaishya, never by birth but by quality. That's Prabhupada's statement. And if you have a look in modernity in India, more and more the ancient concepts of birthright becomes prominent, to the point that today it's said that if a cow is not an Indian breed cow, it is not a cow. That is a popular knowledge which is circulating within India. And I was a little shocked because our founder Charya never made that point. And it has a purpose behind it, because the cow is one of the 64 items of worship. And if a cow which is not from India is not a cow, whatever is in the West is not worshipable. And some people go as far as saying, if it's not worshipable, what is the problem with being killed? So if you follow that mind, that thinking process, what it's saying is, by birth, by origin, we are qualified. And if a cow which is born in India is the real cow, what to speak about the South Brahman, the Brahman from South India? He is the real Brahman. And then we'll fight amongst India, who is the real dynasty of the Brahman? But if you see Prabhupada, he just made a point, and here is his making, that it's not by birth, it is by quality. And that's something which we have to internalize. Developing the qualities which Narada Muni point out as the qualities, truthfulness, austerity, cleanliness. So many, there are 21, 20, 30. 21 is just to be a human being. And 9 is the process of bhakti. It's really nice revisiting this verse. So Rupa Goswami, when he was in Puri for the second time, he stayed with Haridas Thakur. And he composed this beautiful verse, which actually is a verse very useful for us. Because it basically talks about how Lord Gauranga is the one who can give us that bridge between the qualities we don't have and the desires to have those qualities. And the way he does that is just by saying, well, first of all, Prabhupada says, one who chanted Hare Krishna, he cannot give it up. Cannot give it up. He has to come again. This life or next life. Krishna will never leave him. Krishna. One surrenders sincerely, Krishna, I'm yours. Krishna will never leave him and he'll protect you. But if he had become a little stronger, then there is no question of falling down. Hypnotize. It is so nice when become hypnotized. Otherwise, why the boys are working so hard? They are laughter, laughter. They all qualified. So Prabhupada again is saying about the hypnotic movement and the qualities. And Rupa Goswami, when he writes this poem to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he does not like it because it's glorifying him. And I'll finish this class with this point. It says, it's in Antalila, it's in three places, Antalila 1:132, it says, may the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachidevi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost core of your heart, resplendent with his radiance and molten gold. He has descended the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation has ever given before, the mellow of devotional love. And he says in the next verse, may the Lord come and live in your heart as a lion to throw away all your material desires. So here we see King Dushmanta, who is in front of the biggest material attraction, the beauty of a woman, control his senses and behave in a very dharmic way. And Rupa Goswami is asking for the Lord to come and live in our heart so that the Lord, in the form of a lion, Gauranga, he will chase away all the material desires and will be able to actually accomplish. And that's the clue. That's how we, coming from a background, many of you come very pious background, but myself, very impious background. So all those sanskars does not translate into the qualities that Narada Muni is talking about. There's a big bridge. But this is the clue. If Lord Gauranga comes and lives in your heart as a lion, he'll chase away all the material desires. Yeah, I'd like to stop here. And if there are questions or corrections or other points, there's a point at the back. Do we have a mic? Is there a mic here? There's a mic here. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you very much for your class. And while you were giving the lecture, you touched upon the point that at the time of conception, the consciousness of the father and mother has to be right. And if that consciousness is right, then they'll have the Krishna conscious progeny. One question that we often struggle to address when people ask us in this day and age is, why do we have occasions where devotee parents, despite having gone through all the rituals, still beget children who go off track, who appear to go off track?
Sure.
Maybe you could address that and explain why that.
Yeah. Sure. Yes, thank you for your question. It's a good question. His question was, we have good parents who sometimes have children which don't follow, go off track. That's the words he used, right? Why does that happen? Well, each jiva is very individual jiva. And when we say off track, you have to look at the bigger picture. Because many times a teenager lives, but later on in his life, he reflects on everything he went through, and he returns even stronger. Another situation is when a devotee joins, very sincere, he becomes a big leader, and then he falls from that position. Then you might also ask, why did he fall, you know, from that position? And the answer is simple. The answer is basically because that specific jiva has not achieved that level of determination. Even though the room is pure, there's still some impure habits. And it's said that only when a practitioner decides to be a real sadhaka and take that mood of a sadhaka, then he really starts his bhakti process. So being a second generation, many times the child thinks everything is very natural for him. His friends and his mood and his environment. So it doesn't really click that he has to be serious about it. And then sometimes, by association, he acquires different values. And then he strays away. But one thing which is very important is the knowledge a child receives until the age of 10 is his foundational knowledge. So if parents can at least provide a very foundational, strong Krishna conscious value in that period of time, whatever happens after, that becomes partially possible to repair and to remake. But at the same time, you see, that question addresses a very important point. Let's say in the middle of a town, a big capital, and I have to work outside, there's no association, much you have to go from very early age to a school with people who don't have the right mentality. That mentality, even though it came pure in conception, was now influenced by so many other mentalities. So therefore, you see, Prabhupada, he's so practical. He's such a practical person. He says, you go to a farm, you start a farm community, find a simple way to live and give good association for your children because they will be the future of the movement. In that protected environment where economy is not an issue, I don't have to live here and go collect in another place. I can live locally. And living locally gives family bonds, strong family bonds. When we have to travel, we all who have to travel experience what it makes to our family lives. It's a big disaster. Because family needs time, needs bonding, needs that structure which is solid. And I know that my parents will always be my parents. Somewhere in your mind, your parents is your safeguard. Isn't it? So that gives you security as a human being to go forward. So the whole social structure which you talk about, Prabhupada had very clear on his mind. The challenge is, we all came from a scenario where in our mind, that's not possible. To live simply, what about insurance, what about medical, what about... We start thinking, what about college, what about the future, what about security? And all these different needs which we have acquired from society stops us from really meditating and having a simple, protected life. So we do the first part correct. Many devotees are very strict. They chant the 50 rounds. They are very like King Dushmanta. But then the second part, which is the community, they really can't provide alone. So they have to submit their children to an environment.
If you will allow, I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
Based on one of the points you made during while you were answering my previous question. You were saying that one of the mistakes you make is that the second part of the plan is not really well thought out because many devotees have worked in the city. And you were alluding to the fact that creating farm community is the best way. I was wondering if it's possible to establish Varanashram even within the city environment.
Yes.
Because as some of us understand, Varanashram, Varna means to be engaged according to your psychophysical nature. So someone may have the nature of a doctor and be in the city and work with other city doctors. Would that also be considered Varanashram?
Understood. His question is, can you do Varanashram in the urban environment? And the question is absolutely yes. And the reason we have delayed so much is because we haven't understood that. Because a Brahman is a Brahman wherever he is. He doesn't change his varna just because he walked into the town. But it's much more difficult. The cost of living in New York, the cost of living in London. So to keep that community like that is very difficult. And you struggle a lot to keep yourself in that environment. So that's the reason why it's difficult to do. It's possible. but it's a little difficult. We have one more question from Prabhuji here, and then we may have to stop. Okay.
In response to Sringatirtha's question, is that Prabhupada had said to his disciples, he says, it is not your children, but your children's children who will actually become pure. So you can see just from, you know, the declarations of Prabhupada's disciples, that, you know, he went back to Godhead. We kind of all know that probably none of us are going to go back to Godhead, because when we came to the movement, it wasn't because of some amazing birth or, you know, so many credits that we accumulated. It was just simply Prabhupada's mercy. Somehow or other, we got that mercy. Here we are. So it's not going to be our children, but our children's children that are going to be the pure ones. And to Prabhu's question, you know, our children, why are they? Well, look at what we did. We were brought up in nice families, most of us, and we were supposed to be, I was supposed to be a nice Catholic boy, I was an altar boy, I was a choir boy, and now we are Hare Krishna? Where did I go wrong? So, I mean, it's still that free will thing comes in. So we give our children every opportunity, but it's still their call. So, you know, you can't fault yourself as a parent if your child says, you're like experiencing the material world. That's not our fault. That's their choice. They decide that. Go for it. Good luck. We'll see you soon, hopefully.
That's a very good point, and I'd just like to make a small comment on that point, because it's really a combination, because when, as parents, to give the deliberate time to the child, since small, you know, like very small, small-sized children, that you read with them, that you introduce them to bhakti, and you take that time, is something really important. My realization as a parent, I regret the times I didn't do that enough. That I told stories of Krishna, I read books of Krishna together, I gave services which were meaningful from them. Once I was discussing with Ananda Tirtha Prabhu and his wife, and they were saying how important it is to give a meaningful service to their children. So here comes his children, which are very short, with the GBC book of signatures. It's very cute to see them put the GBC book, and they do so perfectly, like such a composed Vaishnava coming in. It's incredible to see. I take this as a great inspiration, because he's giving the time for them, so naturally there's an expected response. So just complementing your comment, which is really beautiful, is that it's their choice and it's our responsibility to give the maximum association we can within Krishna consciousness and meaningfulness to their Krishna consciousness. That's where our community is developing more and more, like teenagehood, it's kind of a blank. The children just don't know what to do, what's expected of them. It's kind of a blank space. What do I do now? And they have to figure out, they have to go through that transformation, internal, outside, etc. And we are making progress. And just to finalize the class, because time is coming, I'll just say that our children's children, I was talking with an Amish person in America, and this person is amazing. And he was just very cool about everything. He was not affected that I was a Hare Krishna. There was actually 12 Hare Krishna around him, afraid that we would preach him down. He was just cool. And he told, responding to my question, says, oh, I see you have from your 10 children, 8 stays with you at home and decides to follow a agrarian lifestyle. Oh my God, I look at you and then he says, cool down. We've been doing this for 300 years. And my parent told me this is all what we do, and I just accepted it and I carried it on. There's not all these options and something. So time hopefully will reveal. And the second point, which is really a responsibility within us. Time will make it, but it depends on our nurturing of those faults. If we just leave it to time, time can be tricky at times. It can propose things, we can get involved and entangled, and when we see we have deviated quite a few degrees. You can only see that after a long time. If you look into one place and you deviate a few degrees, only after some time you see how much you have done it. So, to end on a sweet note, I pray that Lord Gauranga comes and lives in our hearts as a lion to scare away all the material desires so we can actually be pure Vaishnavas and actually fulfill our mission to be here, which is to be the successors of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thank you ever so much for your patience and tolerance. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granta Rajamad Bhagavatam ki, Hare Krishna.